Sure. Yeah. I'm gonna hit the button. I am now recording.
Okay, sure. I think I am also recording.
Fantastic. Remember to move in a little bit.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Put this a little bit more. Yeah.
Well, I need maybe to be I able should to see the notes.
Boost my gain a little bit.
Yeah. Try not to boost it.
What if I get all shouty and loud? Okay.
Oh my god, she's gotten shouty and loud.
Okay,
she's
like
gotten
this.
Shouty and loud. It's what the fine. Hell? Whoa!
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 Whoa. Oh my god.
Oh my god.
Oh my god. How do you, hey Evie, how do you feel that Jason Voorhees is in Multiverses? And also, maybe it wasn't me, but I didn't realize that was a WB property.
What? Oh, yeah, it falls under the WB umbrella, yeah. WB and a New Line, I think.
That sounds right. New Line had a lot of those horror movies, plus New Line was...
Every fucking Jason movie sucks.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't...
Jason X maybe being the one exception. But even
I don't associate. Yeah, I don't associate Friday the 13th with good movies.
Jason.
Now,
Jason.
Agent Smith being in the game is very funny to me.
Wait, is that one of the DLC characters they're adding as well?
Yeah.
Why Agent Smith and not Neo?
I don't know, because like Neo was definitely like he was on the leaked like roster or whatever. I don't know why they would keep him out, but put in Agent Smith.
Yeah, you
maybe
see,
they couldn't get the likeness rights.
They announced the Junker, Jason Voorhees, and Agent Smith. Finally, they're introducing white guy.
Oh boy.
Oh my.
Generic white man. My favorite.
And also Banana Guard from Adventure Time.
Banana? What?
That's weird.
You're not going to go for a lemon grab or whatever that dude's name is?
Oh yeah, that would be the one too.
The lemon think. Party? Is that what you're talking about?
Nope. Not the lemon party. Definitely not that.
So, Evie, what was this the bad decision that you made earlier?
Yeah,
you mentioned?
You're going to tell us about that. Unless, Bridget, do you have your recording open?
What?
Do you have your recording open?
What about my recording?
Are you recording?
Yeah. Right, do you think this is good for the recording?
You motherfucker. Why are you making this harder for me?
Go ahead, Evie. What was the bad decision?
Yeah, I was feeling bad today. I had a headache.
Yeah,
I was sleepy. I was thinking, you know what? I my birthday's coming up. I should treat myself.
Okay.
And so I decided to go in for a board game. Called Earthborn Rangers. I'm quite excited about.
What is the conceit of this Earthbound Rangers?
Earthborn Rangers is a game where you play as a sort of reverse Fallout situation has happened, where shit got so bad on Earth that everyone was like, ah, fuck. We fucked it. We need to go in the vaults and let everything recover. And so they fuck off into the vaults with a bunch of and let like a bunch of terraforming stuff run for 1,000 years and then come back out. And it's like, well, we have a second chance. Let's not fuck it up. And so you play as one of the, as a ranger who kind of travels between different settlements and, you're, like you don't have weapons for the most part or anything like that. Like you're mostly just like interacting with people and nature and exploring this weird new world that has been created.
What happened to all the wildlife in the reforming?
They're around. There are a shitload of the animals got real weird.
So the animals are still fucked up.
Yeah, I was gonna say this sounds less like a reverse Fallout situation and more like just a Fallout situation.
Well, instead of it being a bunch of blasted wastelands, like it's like verdant forests, and
so it's post apocalypse.
Yes, it's like a Horizon Zero Dawn, but with like, if you took the parts of like the setting and world building of that thing that are weird, and replaced it with like, you know, Earthsea or whatever.
So they effectively fucked over the planet and are like, okay, before we go into hiding, we're at least gonna like,
we're gonna try to fix everything.
Gonna set all this stuff up.
Yeah. And so the idea is that when people come back out, they're like, okay, let's try to not fuck it up again. And so there's a very like environmentalist bent to the setting. It's a neat card game that's kind of like a co-op sort of adventure focus type thing.
For sure. I mean, I know. That only sounds like a bad decision in the sense of like not being the most frugal with your money, but like when you need that stuff emotionally, sometimes you need to make that sacrifice.
That's called therapy spending.
See, when you first said reverse Fallout, I was like, well, what? You go into the vault and like you come out and it's like, it's a utopia. Fuck these people. Ooh, look.
Look at how sick the world is. This is awesome. Sick complimentary the world is.
And it is kind of like that, but it's from the perspective of look at the wonder of nature. And this strange and wonderful place. Anyway, I spent almost $200 on it. So,
why is it a $200 game?
Well,
it's a board game.
Okay, so I got the base board game. You know, and that's, you know, that's $90. You know, they knocked 10% off because, you know, it's kind of a pre-order. It's not gonna like be printed. You know, part of the thing is that like it's sustainably printed. So like, you know, they make sure that it's ecologically responsible. It's only cards, like it's all biodegradable, you know, all that kind of stuff. So, you know, I got the board game and that's great.
It comes with a super creatine.
But what if I wanted all of the deck building options for my Rangers? So I have to get the expansion that gives me all of the options for Ranger deck building. And then, you know, I also want to have the mini expansion that adds in additional events that happen kind of as you're traveling. And then you got to have the lore book that has like all the art in as well. And I can't remember if I went in for like the card doubler, which literally just doubles all the cards so you never have to worry about running out of cards when you're deck building. I can't remember if I did that or if I got just like one of the expansions or whatever. Anyway, so that's how it happened.
To be fair to you,
okay,
you meet real life people and play these things.
That is a fair point.
Well, the expected arrival date is more like a December of this year.
Here's my question. Is this the start of a new segment? Evie goes into bankruptcy due to board games?
I don't think so. Like, I have friends who do the board game Kickstarter thing. And, you know, I know the guy who spent money on Bloodborne, the board game.
Did your sister do that too?
Do what?
The Bloodborne board game. Like your
yeah,
sister.
Yeah, she did.
Or
that's
no,
right.
It was the Dark Souls board
Dark
game.
Souls, yeah, yeah. Ordered like all of the packs of that.
And then she like turned around and sold it because
she never used it. Yeah.
Yeah, I have a friend who got both of those, and like they're just taking up space in a room in his house.
I see.
And like, and that ain't me. I think this one spoke to me in a way that other games don't. So I figured I'll go in on this one.
All right,
gotcha. All right. Well, I mean, speaking of, you know, post-apocalyptic landscapes that have been retaken over by nature, that kind of ties in to the start of our next episode of Put It On The List.
Hey,
hi,
who are
everyone.
We?
My name is Jay.
My name is Bree.
I'm Evie.
This time... I'm Bridget.
What we view's connected by cast or crew deciding the next film, that's the gist. Put it on the list.
There we go. We did our introduction, and I guess for sake of, you know, keeping a continuity between these episodes, maybe this time we'll, you know, introduce the concept of the show this time. So... in case this is your first time listening somehow, this is Put It On The List. I'm trying to do an actual explanation here.
I thought you could use some background music.
So
excuse me.
The
go
way
ahead.
That works is every 2 weeks, we watch a movie, then we discuss it. Next person in the queue picks another movie, but that person has to connect that movie somehow, either by cast or crew, to the movie that we just watched.
Oh, yes.
So, last time on Put It On The List...
I got arrested for drug smuggling!
We watched Babe, Pig in the City, as decided on by Bree here.
Yep.
And then what Bridget, my dear love, Bridget, decided to spring on us X-1999, the anime film by Rintaro... and I am still upset about this movie to this day. But before we get into that, it's time for an icebreaker question for everyone. So I put it into our little group chat that we had earlier, a little icebreaker that I think kind of ties into this episode because I really did not like this movie that we watched, and we'll get into why later.
Uh-huh.
Who is your favorite creator, ideally filmmaker, or someone involved specifically with movies, that has an absolute dog shit hit ratio? So, I guess to start off, I'll start with some of mine. Number one with the bullet is Makoto Shinkai. 5 centimeters per second? That movie? Fucking great. That's a great-ass movie. And then that man decided to just make every single one of his movies that movie. And those films basically have no substance outside of, damn, this looks real pretty.
Isn't that just a one-hit wonder?
Well, it's not necessarily that, because the thing is, there's elements in every single Makoto Shinkai film that kind of carry through. And I'm not necessarily against those elements.
Is Makoto Shinkai M. Night Shyamalan?
No.
That's what the M stands
for, Makoto. You pose a very good question. Is Makoto Shinkai the anime equivalent of M. Night Shyamalan? You might not be wrong. You actually might not be wrong. Started off real strong, kind of dipped off a bit in the middle there, and then has weirdly gotten like a resurgence in popularity of the movies that he made in the last few years. So maybe you might be onto something, Bridget. So that's one of my examples. I have a few others, but if other people want to say their choices. Anyone has like an immediate one that jumps out to them?
Yoshiki Tomino.
Tomino, yeah. Explain to us who Tomino is for the non-anime people.
Tomino is the creator of Gundam. He has made all sorts of TV shows and movies based on TV shows. His hit rate is poor.
How poor is it?
It depends on the people you ask. Some people agree on some things, and some people say he hasn't made a good thing in maybe 20 to 30 years. But
awesome.
Jesus Christ. What's the last good thing you think he made? I know what the answer is, but for the sake of our listeners.
Well, his most recent thing, Gundam Reconquista in G, had an adaptation in quotation marks, in that he turned 25 episodes of a TV show into 6 movies, which means it's effectively the same length as watching the TV show, making it kind of pointless to do a theatrical version when normally you do that to make the story more easily digestible.
Ah, sasuga Tomino.
Ah, wash your chum.
But yeah, besides the funny stuff, he's done some really, and I mean dog shit things, like Garzu's Wing, Wings of Reen.
Garzy's Wing, infamous for its English dub, yeah. Which we cannot quote here. Like, that's a whole rabbit hole that we could go down that we should not allow ourselves to go down.
Yeah, sadly, the Wings of Reen do not...
You tried.
Do not have a dub, so we can't hear dub lines about, "Oh, welcome to the field of aborted babies!"
We should have that right. I'm sad that we don't. Yeah. Evie, what about you?
I kind of struggled with the premise of this question a little bit. Where,
to be honest.
I if someone makes something that I really like, and then they make like a bunch of stuff that I don't like, I won't watch the stuff that I don't like. Like, I'll walk away from a motherfucker. I don't care. These people aren't my friends.
Sure, absolutely.
Like,
your time is valuable.
Like, I think the one that I could think of that really like fits the bill of the question is maybe like Alex Garland, where like he,
that's one that I was thinking too.
Yeah, right. He made Dread, and he was like, you know, allegedly really central to the production of Dread, and like he made Annihilation, and then he made Men, and he made Civil War, and like those last two are just like they've garnered a bad reputation, and I haven't watched them kind of because of that, but also like I don't know, I think like. What it kind of got me thinking about is just like creators I have an affinity for, even though they create they're like wildly uneven.
Yes, that's the other kind of creator that I was thinking of when I posed this question.
Yeah, like a lot of comics writers I think fall under that umbrella just by the nature of the thing. They're making so much stuff that, you know, it kind of has to be. Like I thought of like Garth Ennis, who's someone who can write a bunch of stuff that's like really fun or interesting, but also like will create a character named Arseface, or like write a series about zombies that all have boils in the shape of a cross on their face, and are just like they still think like people, but they're all like sadistic and fucked up, like, and then just like write that for a decade. It's real swings and roundabouts with that guy. And I think I think the thing that I have the most affinity, like the creator that I have the most affinity for, while he's still just like every single thing he makes is just like wildly uneven in some way or another, is Stephen King. Like, it's like, you know, it's all there. You know, you look at It, which is like quintessentially Steve, and he, and like, you know, that's a widely read, extremely popular book. Huge, like adapted multiple times. Every, like, considered, you know, his masterpiece, has that scene in it, and as well as like a bunch of other stuff that's like, you know, clearly him, like him trying to write about race, not particularly well. But
a white, what you're telling me that a white man from Maine doesn't know how to write about race relations?
Like, it's weird because like he's writing about it in a way that's like, actually he's like trying to engage with the thing, but he's limited.
The, you know, there's,
it's like Cyborg 009.
Sure.
I don't know what that means. I was going to say it's like the old quote of the road to hell is paved with good intentions. You know, Bree, what do you have?
So I have to admit, I had trouble doing this on a theatrical scale, and I had to move to music because the only thing I could think of was possibly Kevin Smith, but he only did one good movie. That was Clerks 1. That's, even then, it's not.
That's valid. That's like extremely valid.
Oh, yeah. What I mean, for me, it's just that, like, I don't even know if I like absolutely adhere with that movie. It's been a bit. But I do want to talk about a little band called Tool. Tool has made three incredible songs, okay? And every time I hear another one of their songs on the album, it's like you're starting a motor. I'm waiting for that motor to turn over. And I know the potential's there, and it just fucking doesn't. And then we waited like a fucking decade, and then they put out another album that was just the most boring elements of their last album. And it's like, what do you... Anyway, I found that very frustrating and thus fell out of it. I think Pussifer was actually a better project, if only for being more varied.
For sure.
But like, you know...
Did you say Pussifer?
Yeah. That is the name of another band that guy is in.
It's pretty good. Anyway, I mean, it's just as juvenile, but a little bit more interesting. But there's that. The other thing is, like, can we talk about Depeche Mode's two really godlike albums and the rest of Depeche Mode?
I don't know enough about Depeche Mode, so you need to talk about Depeche Mode.
Okay, Violator is one of the best albums ever written. Sounds of the Universe is one of my most re-listened to albums. I couldn't tell you much about the others, they didn't hit me. That's my long and short of it.
Like, here's the thing, despite you struggling with the theatrical side, Kevin Smith is like maybe one of the best answers that you could give.
I just didn't think he had enough hits, in my opinion.
But that's the point, is like, well, his hit ratio
at what point
is
are you
shit.
A one-hit wonder, though?
I mean, you can be a one-hit wonder and be qualified as having a shitty hit ratio. Like,
he is absolutely a creator who's like, he's got the one movie that's like good, but like I've watched enough of his other movies that just like I like it enough, but like I could see where the problems are.
I think kind of going back to the idea that Evie was talking about, like uneven creators, I have a couple examples for those. Hideaki Anno is probably my big one.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
I have a lot of issues with basically every single Hideaki Anno project I have ever watched. Like, the only one that across the board is good to me is End of Evangelion. Shin Godzilla, like, a bit. Like, Shin Godzilla is pretty good. The rest of Hideaki Anno?
What don't you like about Gunbuster?
I think Gunbuster is uneven as a project. I think the first few episodes of Gunbuster are good-ish. Like, they're fine. But for me, that show doesn't start popping off until the back half of it. Like, that's when it actually gets really cool and starts doing, like, interesting shit with the ideas that it was setting up in the beginning of the series.
But anyway, this all leads us to our discussion today.
Yes.
Let's talk about the movie X, 1999.
Wait. Evie has something to...
I need to put a pin in this conversation because I have something to say, and also there's a giant fly in my room, and I'm going to try to kill it. Real quick. All right.
Yes, Evie.
I feel like this is going to be a very contentious discussion.
Yes.
By virtue of the fact that for days on end, you've talked about how much you hated this movie and you can't wait to talk a bunch of shit about it.
We hated this movie.
So I want to make a couple of requests to someone who's probably not going to talk as much. I refuse to sit through a scene by scene, minute by minute breakdown of X. If we go through with the detail that we did through Babe Pick in the City, I will start playing a video game.
Yeah, that is fair. That is absolutely fair.
So that's one thing. And the other thing is just... Well, okay, let me begin with like a top level... like a leading question,
sure,
to you all. Who fucking cares about X?
That's a very good question.
90s anime fans.
Okay.
I, as a 90s anime fan, resent that.
Because, like, my takeaway for this movie, which I feel like is probably like the sort of averaged opinion of the people on this call, is like, this movie is like nothing. It is like it's median anime to me. Like, it is if you look at, you know, the shelf of a Blockbuster Video in 1996 and like the anime available on there, like, this is the perfect like middle of all of those, if you like ranked it from like wholesome to, you know, gut-bustingly offensive. It's it is perfectly archetypal anime.
And, you know, I would... Go ahead.
And it, ultimately, it's just like... I felt nothing at the end of it. Like, I don't even feel like it's worth getting mad at.
I felt like 4 hours of my life had been wasted.
So
that's because you watched it 4 times.
We watched it 3 times. But
I only watched it once, but it felt like 4 hours.
That comes to 4 hours.
Yeah.
Just for the sake of getting us all unified on this, I do want to say that I think basically everyone on this call agrees with you about the general point that you're making there of this movie being so middle of the road and nothing. I think the thing for me that offends me and made me so angry in my viewing is, if I'm going to spend an hour and 40 minutes with a thing, I need to feel something from it. And when I come out of it feeling like I basically got nothing for that hour and 40 minutes that I spent with it, that's when I end up getting angry. Like Bree said, it felt like I literally wasted my time watching this film. And that's why I have the more, like, just straight up visceral reaction that I do about this movie.
It's a very well illustrated film. No, it's beautifully animated.
Let's start with the positives.
All two
this movie is fucking gorgeous. There's some sequences in this movie that I would say would that were probably plastered across like computer desktops in the 90s.
Sure.
What were you going to say, Bridget?
Well, I was just going to kind of start at like the top level. This film is X, also known as X1999, to differentiate it and also to actually make it searchable, because apparently recently there was another movie in these recent times called X. Yes. Help confuse,
directed by Ty West. Yes.
To confuse things.
Well, here's the thing that makes it even more confusing. X1999 did not come out in 1999.
No. It came out in 2000. It came out in 1996, but yes. Wasn't released in the U.S. until the year 2000. So also not, none of these dates are 1999 is the thing.
This is a movie that makes me wish I had always been dead.
Okay, we can't get into it yet. Again, Bridget is leading the conversation.
Okay, sorry.
Let's let her take the reins.
So this is a Madhouse film who has done numerous theatrical adaptations at this point. And what would have been prominent, especially at the time, is this was being directed by Rintaro, who, for those who don't know Rintaro, he is a highly like acclaimed anime director.
Wouldn't we say that Rintaro is very divisive as a director, though?
Yes, because here's the thing with Rintaro, it's like a test. Because no person will have the same favorite Rintaro movies.
Well, I would say there's probably one that generally across the board tends to be the like median answer from people as the favorite Rintaro movie, which is probably Metropolis.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Arcadia of my youth.
I feel like that one's a little bit too niche. Metropolis is at least known outside of anime circles. Arcadia of my youth, you start getting into the weeds a little bit there.
But yeah, he did a lot of those Leiji Matsumoto stuff, the Galaxy Express, Dagger of Kamui, ironically before this, which stars a totally different Kamui.
Yeah. Different Kamui. In a film where there is already two Kamuis, there's the Dagger of Kamui is about another different Kamui.
Two shoes Kamui, yeah.
But, and also Harmageddon, which in Japan is highly appreciated. But if you ask anybody who would see it except Gerald Rathkoll from Anime World Order, they would say that movie's terrible and boring.
All right, so we have our little bit of background about Rintaro, the studio that made it.
And the other thing about this movie is it is adapting a manga by the all... women group Clamp. This movie is also co-written by Rintaro and Natsuke, who is the main writer of every single Clamp story. With everyone you like or hate is written by her. If you like Cardcaptor Sakura, it was written by her.
I thought it had a very shoujo.
Gave us the Clamps.
It is absolutely fascinating to me that this movie is co-written by one of the people that worked on the manga, because you would assume by the amount of care or lack thereof that is given to each individual cast member in this movie that it was written by someone who, like, literally just had the manga like dumped on their desk and said, put this into an hour and a half, good luck, fucker.
That seems unlikely when I,
It would be like you said, okay, we're making a One Piece movie and Oda is co-writing it. And you, like, watch it and you're like, that was terrible.
Yeah, what was up with that guy on the crew who has, like, the crazy robot arms and shit? Like, he was there for, like, 5 seconds and he was, like, weirdly obsessed with soda. What the fuck was that guy's deal?
Soda.
Like, what was up with that? Like, it baffles my mind just how little care is given to these characters, but I will let you get back on track, sorry.
But, and part of the reason for that kind of collaboration is because at the time, the manga was not finished. So the idea was like, okay, we want to write something that can tell a complete story, theoretically. This is all theory, because I've seen this film, and if this tells a complete story, that I'm afraid of what they think a complete story would be.
So, okay. We can't do a beat by beat of this movie.
We can just do a general thing.
No, here's the thing. You can't even really do a general thing, because the first hour of this movie primarily consists of dream sequences or visions of the future. Like, that is one of my biggest gripes with this movie, is it spends so long building itself up to what the consequences, like, it spends so long building up the consequences of the events that are going to happen at the end of this movie, that it spends no time with the characters, and thus, as shit starts to get real throughout the movie, characters start getting into life or death battles, things of that nature, characters start dying. Like, you don't care about these characters because you have had no actual interactions with them.
There's no gravity.
Like, they have been appearing on the screen, they have gotten introductions, and I'm putting that in scare quotes here, but they've not really gotten fleshed out in any, like, tangible way that makes you feel something for them. So that's one major thing for me. Like, the movie does such a poor job of what I am talking about that in the English dub, in the beginning sequences, as Kamui is entering Tokyo and there's not any dialogue happening in the original Japanese, they have to insert narration over clips of the other, like, random characters in the cast telling you who they are, because the movie doesn't do a good enough job of actually introducing you to them and who they are.
Okay, like,
it's all set dressing.
I feel like you can boil this down. Like, it's like there's good psychic dragons and bad psychic dragons. The good psychic dragons don't want to see Tokyo destroyed. The bad psychic dragons do want to destroy Tokyo and all of mankind.
But for the sake of saving the Earth.
Yeah, for the sake of saving the Earth.
It's environmental bullshit. However, like...
So I have things I want to talk about with that, but I will let you finish. We'll get back. We'll circle around to that conversation.
Okay. That most of the runtime is spent, like, people kind of just chase their tails for the most part, getting to a situation to where the final showdown can happen. And it all comes down to a conflict between the ringer for the good dragons, who was a guy named Kamui. He had left Tokyo for some reason and then is coming back into town and kind of...
The boys are back in town.
Yeah. Play The Boys Are Back in Town at 0.25 speed if you want.
Yes, please. Please. Just like...
And the boys are back in
town. So anyways, coming back in town, he's got a childhood girlfriend who he's trying to protect, and his childhood friend, who it turns out is actually his like spiritual opposite. He is also a Kamui,
and his twin star.
Yeah, and he's one of the evil dragons, and
except he does not start off as evil.
Yeah, he kind of like, gets turned.
He gets recruited.
Theoretically,
he gets kidnapped by the evil dragons.
Anyway, everyone dies, and then like nothing matters. The end.
No, they save Earth. They do save Earth. Tokyo's fucked, by the way.
Tokyo is fucked. Kamui lives.
Tokyo is so Jover. It's so gone.
Okay, now argue for 3 hours. I don't care.
Okay, no, I mean, I'm trying to think of where
ostensibly, part of the thing with this movie is like when you do something like this that has a ton of characters and you have minimal time, what theoretically you're supposed to do is like, okay, we gotta boil this down to at least like one or two or three main characters that you have to focus on, because there's literally, you're not gonna have time to like spend with, what is it, seven dragons on each side?
Yeah.
Well, you know, they kill off two of the dragons, like, in the first five
minutes. They are like, oh, fuck these people are dead.
Those guys that die get as much development as any of the other characters, so it's like, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which is not good!
So theoretically, this movie should be about, okay, these two people, you're the yin and yang, you got Fuma on one side and you got Kamui on the other. However, a key plot element that should be there is, why the fuck does Fuma turn evil in any sort of way? Because the reason he gets...
Wait, let me break this down. Let me just talk about the sequence of events that happens. Like, just lightly. So he gets kidnapped by the evil prophecy lady that's leading the dragons of the earth.
Is that Ponytail Mom?
No, she's not related. She's dead. Don't worry about her.
But she pulls out the religious symbolism.
She pulls out the Hebrew claymore. we can't get bogged down about cool swords. It's okay.
Wait, I want to
get a goddamn word in if I'm going to be here. With every fucking anime that survives on its animation, they love religious symbology. They really, really do. So you get we get pentagrams. We get like the Hebrew on a sword with a hilt with a Jewish star on the end of it. There's a cross.
Yeah, someone's crucified with barbed wire.
They really bring that in. There's a lot of that sprinkled throughout it. I felt the need to point that out.
Okay.
Go ahead.
And I also just want to point out that this movie posits that every woman has a sword in her. And it just depends if you can pull it out yourself.
What about the wolf girl, though? She didn't have a sword.
Who?
The wolf girl.
Well, she had also a wolf. Why would she need a sword?
Why do you need a sword when you have a perfectly good wolf?
Why not both? That's all I'm asking.
This is
the one girl can pull her own sword out.
That part is oh my god.
Okay, wait.
Yeah, I got derailed. Where was I?
I can't remember. It doesn't matter.
It really doesn't. This is actually a perfect representation of the movie.
So it's clear, like, where the lines are coming down, but Bridget, I want to hear what do you think about this movie? What's your takeaway from this?
My takeaway from this movie is it is a beautifully animated failure to adapt something.
So here's to drill down on that a little bit further. We talked about this lightly a few nights ago off record. Tell me what those three bullet points you gave me were for like the positive qualities of this movie. I remember what
they
were.
She may not stand by those points. I don't know.
The animation.
I think she does. Mm-hmm. The animation, which I agree with you on.
Sure. The beheadings.
That was not one of the points. The beheadings are pretty cool, but that was not one of the points. So, really, it was less 3 points, and it kind of just ended up being 2 points, with one of those points being separated into two separate things. It was the animation is cool, and the pacing in this movie was good, which that is a fucking lie.
Oh, I think the pacing's fine.
I think you're fucking crazy.
The first hour
no,
Bree, of this
Bree,
movie.
Bree, you need to let me talk. The first 20 minutes of this movie feel like a fucking hour. I have no idea how you can watch this movie and say that the pacing is good. You want to know what other movie I watched earlier today? I rewatched Mad Max Fury Road. The first half hour of that movie feels like 10 minutes. It's fucking awesome. That movie feels so great in terms of its pacing. X? No. That's madness to me. I do not understand how you think the pacing of this movie is good. I would like you to explain that.
Well, you see, the final battle is approaching.
The final battle is about to begin. The final battle is about to begin. The final battle.
You see,
is
the
about
joke here, people, is
the final battle is
in
about
the movie.
To begin. But wait, Bridget, the final battle is about to begin.
They constantly reference this final battle is happening or beginning or about to happen. I think it's okay pacing because things are happening. Mind you, you might not know what is happening, but things happen. Things happen in the movie in a way.
Everyone listening, but it's making some shapes.
Things aren't happening, though. Things don't happen. Like, things happen, like, twice in the first hour of that movie. The majority of that first hour is just dream sequences.
Well,
and,
that's something
like,
happening.
Possible future,
that's
future
not,
predictions.
That's not actually something happening.
Yeah.
I'm talking about No. Let me finish. I'm talking about tangible events. Things that actually happen in that movie that have ramifications for the ending of that movie.
Well, both of them do, kind of. One of them absolutely doesn't, though. Okay, so like Kamui meets his friends and then instead of like really introducing himself, instantly gets sucked into a dream world, standing up and gets explained, oh, the world's going to be destroyed.
And then Fuma has the same thing happen to him.
And the argument there is like, look how great it is. Humanity's been destroyed and the plants have regrown. Spoiler, that has absolutely nothing to do with anything. Like, literally, yeah. I think...
So what are the ramifications?
Well, the ramifications of Kamui going to the Earth or the Heaven people is that, I guess, because you can't fight destiny, he has to be evil. I guess he has to be evil because he's all the... You see, if Kamui was evil, he would have been good, I guess.
I also couldn't help but notice that it's so much later than you have the same exact setup with Kamui that, like, they do the same thing. Well, Kamui happened first.
Yeah,
Kamui. So I'm saying it's much later after that that you go through it with him, and it's like, we already went through this, and I feel like my life has gone by in the past, like, between that and this. And it's just...
Like, here's what I would say. The only thing that happens in one of those dream sequences that has actual ramifications is Kotori getting pulled. She gets gooped. Kotori, yeah. At a certain point, there's, like, some kind of, like... There's a fight happening, which I take umbrage with calling any of the, like, clashes between either side fights, because usually fights are exciting, and they are not exciting in this movie. There's a small clash that happens, and Kotori gets gooped by the evil, like, dream prophecy lady.
I got
kidnapped.
Gooped.
So here's actually something I didn't reference.
What's up?
Do you know what the main way of battle in Harmageddon is?
No, I don't.
It's psychic battles.
Okay.
So that's part of the reason why they're bringing Rintar on for this is like, oh, okay. This is somebody who knows how to animate and do psychic battles. But...
like, he does, but there's... again, because
psychic battles are hard.
The psychic battles are hard, but again, the thing for me is you could make those fights engaging. Like, people like Dragon Ball Z. A lot of fights in Dragon Ball Z are just like lines going across the screen, and then you suddenly see a flash of like people like punching against an arm, and then back to like lines flashing across the screen. People find that engaging because there's characters. Because there's actual tangible characters there that you feel something for, that you care about the interactions happening between them. You don't have that here. Like, you spend so little time with any of these characters, and they try to give the characters like cool moments in fights throughout the movie, but every fight is generally like 30 seconds, like 30 seconds to a minute of like actual exchanges, and you don't get any time to actually get cool moments with those characters.
How was it you were saying earlier, like you were comparing with the very little time to set up, you felt that like Mad Max Fury Road did a better job of like invoking world building and like feeling for these characters?
I mean, it's an unfair comparison because Mad Max Fury Road is arguably like one of the best movies, if not the best movie of the last decade.
Sure.
Like that is arguably the best movie of the 2010s. So it's unfair. I'm going to admit that right up front here.
Granted.
But... Mad Max Fury Road does so much in terms of its world building, in terms of actually making you care about these characters through a primarily visual medium. There's not a lot of dialogue in Mad Max Fury Road, but it does such a good job of conveying what it needs to convey about its world, about its characters, about the power struggle that is central to that movie, that it doesn't need to like bog it down with dialogue or anything of that nature. It simply does the shit that it does, and you are in it. X does not do any of that.
Even if you're not like, you know, there are no shortage of movies that are like, you know, it's like Predator does a similar thing where it's just like, these guys, we only get like, they only have like a couple of lines to establish like who the hell they are and like why we should care about them. But like, and I think the thing about X is like, you just never get a sense for like what the stakes are in like a, like other than like, they're going to blow up the world, I guess. And some characters you don't really care about might die. Like it's.
Here's the way that I would phrase it. X focuses too much on the big picture ramifications of the events and spends no time on the intimate, like, small picture ramifications of the events. And that is, like, the fucking thorn in its side that kills this movie.
The main characters have as much gravitas and gravity of the NPCs around them who are just in the backdrop. Like, yeah. It might as well be anyone.
I mean, there's one villain later on who basically slides into the movie last second. He effectively has, like, 5 minutes of actual screen time and then dies.
He basically just like walks up to the heroes and like starts to fight with them. Like I think like it's a bit of a bummer, like, because I feel like, you know, that guy, I think he could have been a fun villain. Like,
yeah,
I would have liked to see more of like the computer hacker girl and see what she was about.
Did
like,
we ever figure out what that biocomputer chair from Ghost in the Shell did?
No, like other than control, like
it controls fiber, like yeah, all the fiber optic cables.
She apparently, say in the movie, apparently she can hack anything and also control fiber wire.
Yeah. So like, here's the thing. there's a lot of elements of X that I think would be really fucking cool. I think a lot of the characters are conceptually cool. You have a girl that, like, summons a fucking wolf spirit. That's awesome.
That's do something with it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a shame that the coolest thing the wolf does requires her to fucking die for somebody have their entire arm ripped off.
I would argue that the only, like, character in this movie who has one of those, like, flashes of, like, you could tell the filmmakers wanted to do something cool with each one of these characters, she's the only one who gets a moment like that that succeeds. And technically it's not even her, it's the fucking wolf. Yeah. Like, she's lying basically dead on the floor with Kamui over her, and the, like, big burly guy who slid into the movie 5 minutes ago is, like, lighting a cigarette, just like, alright, time to end things, kid. And suddenly his fucking left arm gets blown off like a doom monster. It's awesome. And then she's dead, and the wolf spirit is gone.
Like, when things start happening in this film, though, like, the other problem is that, like, it's not only that they don't establish the characters, it's that once things start happening, they wasted all that time setting up the premise over and over again, and then they shoved all these people in. It's like the SNL lineup. This guy, this person, here's this guy, this thing, Sadly Anders, Colonel Sanders, I'm your friend from school. Now, before we, and this person just showed up, and they do nothing with any of them.
Guest starring Alec Baldwin.
Like, what the fuck is happening?
Basically, each person in the villain counterparts always die together, except when Fuma just decides to stab everyone else who's left over.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, that... that's
one of the guys, he only just stands next to the chair for a little while and then he dies. Like,
technically not. He that guy was the other person that was fighting against Kamui and the wolf girl in that sequence. He's the dude who has that weird weapon with, like, the wire in between it. It's basically like,
oh, that was him. Oh,
yeah, that was that guy. But again,
I forget. I forgot who even that was. Yeah. Okay.
Lending credence to the argument that this movie does not set up any of its characters.
Here's my main thing is, like, I feel like, as I said, if you were to just set up Fuma and Kamui a little bit better, or at least give Fuma more reason to, like, act as he does, instead of just, I'm evil McEvil and I've become the evil man.
Like, here's what I would say. Like, they literally don't need to spend all the time that they do in the beginning of that movie, like, setting up that conflict between the dragons of heaven and earth.
They really don't.
Like, they could literally just have Fuma and Kamui have, like, a simultaneous, like, dream sequence where they dream that same apocalyptic dream, and then they just coincidentally run into the different psychic ladies.
Yeah.
And get introduced to those squads. Like, literally, this movie would be vastly improved if it spent, like, 75% less time focusing on the big picture and just spent time with Fuma and Kamui, like, actually learning about those characters that are around them. Like, the way I described it to Bree is, you cut down on the world building, spend more time on the character building, maybe add, like, another 20-30 minutes onto the movie, and then that would make everything work so much better.
Like, so, like, from our perspective as the viewer, it's like, we see Fuma, he seems like an okay guy. Oh no, his sister...
He seems more than okay, he seems above board.
Like he even says, I'm gonna protect your comedy, oh ho ho.
Yeah.
And then his sister gets stolen, right?
Literally in the scene before he finally turns, like, full evil and starts, like, attacking the dragons of heaven, he's questioning, like, why the fuck am I even going along with this? Like, he's like, I don't really understand. Am I really, like, the other Kamui? Like, I don't get this. Next scene we see him in, he's fucking Merkin motherfuckers.
Like, it doesn't make sense. Like, who fucking cares about Destiny? That evil lady stole your sister, and you're like, you're
and
like,
your sister ran away like she was having an orgasm. Like,
that was just in the dub.
In this movie sounds like they are about to bust one. Okay?
I mean,
like,
the dub does have some pretty funny moments.
The dub
in
is
it.
Really good for that.
Yes, for those who don't know, this was dubbed by Manga Entertainment in the UK, and certain characters definitely slip into "Oi, Governor!"
Yes, it's so good. Wolf Girl does it multiple
yeah, and Wolf
times.
Girl.
She's the worst culprit.
Yes. Yeah, what she's the
mean?
Worst.
I just went to get a sport tea. Have me some Battenberg.
It's like, so like,
there was
funny.
A very good moment. There's a very good moment of one of the clearly British voice actors is like a British guy who's acting in an American accent, who's doing like a bit of like Southern US affectation, and it sounded like the dumbest thing possible.
Yeah, they're
just like, it sounded
speed
horrible.
Racer. They are serving Deke.
One thing to know, Kamui himself is a Daisaboro Eddie Van from Mad Bull 34.
We can't get into the weeds of Mad Bull because I think that's getting a little bit too anime centric.
Yeah, that's
real heads know.
Hey, I have a question. How did you feel to learn that randomly the entire reason for these two sides fighting is the one big boob dream girl is like, I want to free you from the Japanese government?
Okay, so now we can start talking about like other thematic things about this movie that it like verges on being interesting. Evie, you look like you had something to say.
Yeah, to say something real quick that'll like segue into that. Like, I think like to touch on a couple of the other outstanding characters that we didn't mention. There was a lady named Karen who is just like a prostitute who just like is in prostitute costume the entire time. Across multiple days.
That's very different.
You don't really think about until you see a full body shot of her shortly before she dies.
Oh,
like
yeah.
For the most part, you think that, oh, maybe she's just wearing like a lacy top or
yeah,
something
right.
like that. And then it cuts to her.
She wearing a bodysuit.
Yeah. It's a bodysuit with her wearing like a lab coat.
Yeah. And there's a teenage girl who can summon a katana and she's wearing a school outfit and just like she's one of the things that made me be like, this is like the most, this is median anime.
You see, she can, this movie,
I was gonna say,
oh,
this reads like what if you talk to like, you know, like your boomer father would describe anime as after seeing a little bit of Japanese animation and going, oh, it's a bunch of people with high-pitched voices and then stuff happens and explodes and weird religious symbolism and oh, I'm your high school friend. This is like it being described by someone who doesn't know anime.
Yeah.
Like, is what this movie is.
Anime section in a Blockbuster video in 1996. Yes.
Yes, exactly. Mermaid Scar. It's that. It's just, Jesus fucking Christ, what is any of this?
Bridget, what were you going to say?
Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
Or did you forget what you were going to say now?
I forgot what I was going to say, but yeah, it's the Japanese government's fault.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
here's
the thing.
The last thing. I have one more thing. It was going to go directly into this. I was going to be great. The last character is just like the most normal man who's just like, he's just like, he must be in his 30s. He's got some kind of family, I guess. And
Hi,
like,
I'm Greg.
In the dub, I don't know if this is in, I don't know if it's in the original, but like he is the only person in the dub who like gives voice to like the actual like greater conflict, where it's just like I don't care if it would be better for the earth if mankind all died. I have like a family.
Yeah, I have a family to take care of.
I have to protect them. Yeah.
Yeah. And he also dies in a way that would be cool if it were any other movie. He literally like fucking German suplexes a dude off of a fucking skyscraper so hard that it collapses the skyscraper. Like, if that were in any other movie, it'd be fucking sick. But it's not, because it's an X-1999.
And we're just like, what? I can't even remember that guy's name. Just like I can't remember anyone's name in this movie.
Yeah!
I mean, here's the thing, and this goes back to you mentioning how, like, this is a collaboration, or sorry, a compilation, if you will, of all of these little, like, anime desktops, like, you know, backgrounds. Because that's the thing. For me, what this read as is someone who, like, originally thought up an idea for a story in her head the first time when she was a teenager.
Uh-huh.
This movie has a lot of cool visuals, but it plays out like, here are all the cool scenes I want to happen in the pivotal parts of my story, but if they didn't write a fucking story between them. And these could have been powerful scenes if they weren't front-loaded plot vomit, but were instead happening at key points to characters we've been given any know or feel anything for, you know? That's the thing. These are all things that if you use these right, they could be good. Here's some shit you could put in a story if there was a fucking story.
Like, I legitimately think that the general power struggle, like, Bridget, you were kind of lightly clowning on it earlier of like kind of eco-terrorism versus this movie. The power struggle between like the Dragons of Heaven and Dragons of Earth are essentially like neoliberalism versus fucking eco-terrorism. Like that is more or less what like the power struggle is there. And that could be an interesting thing to focus a movie on, but they don't spend any time focusing on the characters and why they are invested in this thing that they are going for.
The division of leftist Twitter, the anime.
Like, the guy who gets, like, suplexed is the only person who even voices his own opinion that humans should be eradicated and that.
Yeah.
Like, he's the only one who seems to at least be talking about their agenda.
Yeah. Like,
but on the quote-unquote evil side, two people have separate agendas from whatever the eco-terrorism is. One is just, I'm committing eco-terrorism to free my sister from the Japanese government, and the other is, I'm evil, everything die.
Yeah, which, returning to the psychic lady, that could be interesting. Like, that's really fucking cool. Like, the struggle between the psychic ladies of, like, you essentially have this one who's being used for, like, politicians' gains and shit like that. And the sister to her is like, I'm just going to fuck up your prophecies so bad that they have to let you go. Like, that would be interesting if I felt any fucking thing for those two characters. That would be a really cool idea.
Yeah, that girl's basically really being used as like a precog from Minority Report.
Yeah, like that would be sick. Like and then kind of on the flip side of that, the one like analytical thing that I could think of that maybe Rintaro and the Clamp Rider were going for with this movie is trying to have some kind of commentary on like determinism and how that philosophical worldview isn't just self-destructive, but is also like boring as shit. Like, living your life in that point of view where you're just like, everything is predetermined. I just have to, you know, follow, like, do these exact things. And because nothing I do matters. It's all just going to lead to the same thing.
Uh-huh.
The problem with that, though, is when you're emphasizing how boring that philosophical worldview is, you make a movie that is just as fucking boring as that idea that everything is predetermined and it doesn't fucking matter. You know what's a movie that's all kind of about determinism and being like fated to just like be doomed? Hereditary. That's not a boring movie. That's fucking Kino cinema. That is a good ass film. But I don't know. That's the closest thing to intent that I can think of behind why the movie is as boring as it is.
Well, you see, their visions and predictions don't become true because we learn that Mom's sword is stronger than All Sword.
Oh my god.
One thing we haven't talked enough about is that inside every woman is a sword. And
we already talked about this.
If a guy takes a sword out of a woman, she dies.
Possibly, and in the case of the woman removing the sword through herself, like, too forcefully, like, not being able to simply summon it from her skin, but has to, like, reach in by force and pull it out. If she does that to herself, she will explode into Gibbs, like she literally's mom does in the beginning.
Here's the other thing. That mom, she says, Kabui, I'm gonna die. And it's like, she has the mom side ponytail, which if you don't know anime, if you have a mom side ponytail, that means you are destined to die.
Yes. Anime stereotype number one.
But it was very funny applied to Kabui. I know I'm gonna die. I'm like, just change your hairstyle, lady. Like, come on.
Yeah, that would solve all the problems here if you had just changed that.
Yeah. In fact, she's the one who sets this all in motion. What a good mom, killing herself with a sword. And
but also, did she do that, or was that just a dream sequence? I think that was just a dream sequence.
I think it was supposed to be like a flashback.
I have no further notes, so I'm going to go ahead and...
Bree is tapping out. Bree is literally leaving the recording now.
I can't relive it.
I'll call you back when we finish the discussion.
Sounds good.
All right. It's just us three now. Okay. I mean, honestly, I don't know how much more I really have to say about this movie. Like, I've hit all the points I really want to
hit.
Well,
at the end of the movie,
one thing I want to get to.
He instant kills Fuma, who stole the sister's sword.
Spend the whole
it's so
hour and
fucking
a half
funny.
Before this, building up to the final battle and how important that it is, and he fucking cuts the dude's head off in 10 seconds.
It's so funny. That's how you know Destiny isn't real, because all the future stuff was showing them fighting over and over again, and he's just like, nope.
Well, like I said, that's the one thing that's maybe making me start to doubt whether or not this movie is accidentally boring and it was actually intentional with its choices.
I don't care if it's intentional.
No, yeah, ultimately that's where I come back to, is even if it was intentional, I'm sorry, you still made a fucking boring movie.
And then Tokyo is destroyed and he's holding Fuma's head like, oh no, Fuma, like the end of the Devil Man.
I don't, I'm gonna try not to get too heated, but that ending is literally insulting to my senses. Like, every single time I get to it, I am angry because it tries to treat it with, like, a level of gravitas that movie did not fucking earn. You did not spend enough time on the relationship between Fuma and Kamui to get this kind of, like, heartbreaking reaction where he's like yelling, sobbing, holding the head in his arms, like tears rolling down his face. You have like this fucking power ballad by X Japan playing in the background. You have like flashbacks to photos my apologies. You have flashbacks to photos of the three of them, like Fuma, Kamui, and Kotori as kids, like getting along happily. You hear Fuma talking about like, yeah, at the end of the day, you promised to protect us, and I promised that I would protect you and everything. And it's supposed to be this big tragic affair, and I feel nothing. And the fact that they are trying to pull those heartstrings at all insults me.
I know I let you down. I've been a fool to myself.
It is very like we have like Comsussor Todd at home. Like
it is.
I mean, yeah. This predates it, but
I mean, yeah, but like it's.
But
it was so mediocre, it went back in time and chomped the flavor before it even happened.
Oh, do you mean like the Snake Plissken ad with Tim Spiken, smokes?
That's not going back in time. Snake Plissken was a character that existed before.
But it exists in Kamui's world. Think about that. One of the things we didn't get into...
Wait, hold on. What is the...
One of the things...
Can you repeat that?
Nope. No. One of the things we didn't mention is half of this cast is all from various other clamp works, ranging from Dojinshi to Tokyo Babylon, etc., etc. None of that matters.
Tokyo Babylon is technically tied to like X, actually. So I don't feel like you can count that as being a separate clamp work. However, yes, as a non-clamp head, you are the, or none of us on the call here would be aware of that.
Yeah, that's just one of the things that, and it's especially funny because Kamui, at least for my research, he doesn't appear in Tokyo Babylon or anything. He's original to X. So, I'm just trying to think of what is the objective of making an entire movie where you kill off half of the characters you created in like a like an MCU situation before that was a thing.
I think Clamp kind of sucks at writing. I think Clamp is kind of bad, actually.
Does this movie carry forward in a continuity sense?
No.
Like, is this just like a dead end?
This is a dead end because they had to write an ending for a manga that wasn't...
didn't have an ending.
Okay.
So
like, I don't know. They can kill as many people off as they want.
Yeah. Like it all doesn't matter at the end.
Yeah.
Like, the thing is like, once... After the first death or two, I was like, oh, okay, everyone's dead. No one survived.
Like, yeah, but that's... You should still feel something. Like, going back to the Mad Max...
Do you know what I feel?
Thing... No. Let me finish my point. Going back to the Mad Max Fury Road thing, it's a fucking post-apocalyptic movie. Like... You know people are gonna die because, like, it's a desolate wasteland. That shit's... And if you know the genre, you know that it's very bleak. There's probably going to be character death. Or at the very least, some kind of tragedies are going to befall this cast of characters that you're talking about. But again, it does enough in terms of its character building, like, buying you in on the cast that you are working with, that you still care. I got towards the end of Mad Max Fury Road, and they introduce you, like, in the basically right before the last act of that movie to, like, this clan of, like, women, specifically, like, older women, who kind of tag along through that last act. And you don't get to spend like a lot of time with them, but it does a good enough job of connecting you to them that when those characters start dying, you feel shit. You're like, damn, that fucking sucks that that person died there. None of that exists here. You have characters that are in this movie from the beginning, and you feel nothing when they get got.
You feel nothing, Bubkiss!
You lose!
Good day! So yeah, overall, I thought the movie was okay.
I have... Even you were... How do you think this movie is okay? This movie should at least qualify as a 2, I feel like, to you. Especially when you described it in the beginning of this podcast as being a failure.
Yeah.
Something that... 3 stars is a passing grade.
Look, it's a C-.
That's a passing grade!
Bridget's,
what are you talking about?
Bridget's scoring on, like, that GamePro scale, where it's just like, if it's a 3, you do not want to spend money on that. Like, you, like, oh, it has to be at least a 4 before you think about like,
I mean, that's true. That's my system, is that I buy things that are 4 stars, and if it's 3 stars, it's not worth buying.
No, yeah, I mean, but then this just goes back to, like, my scaling, where... If something qualifies that hard into, like, the 3-star point, that usually means that it's so boring that it's actually, like, a 1 or 2 star.
No, that's a 2-star. If it's boring, it's a 2-star.
This movie is boring.
This is not
this
a boring movie.
No,
I enjoyed,
this movie's mad boring.
I enjoyed...
What are you talking... No,
I
actually,
enjoyed my personal time.
I remembered
time.
What the 3rd point was. I remembered what the 3rd point was. It was you said that you weren't bored while watching this movie. What the fuck is wrong with you?
It was... Even... Because when I was watching it, I realized, oh, this is a bad movie. I could switch to that mode where it is just pure enjoyment at that point.
I don't.
But it's
I don't.
Not an, this isn't an exciting bad.
Yeah. Like
it is for me.
How?
But like there's violence, but like there's no, like, it's not shocking in any way. It's
yeah,
just
of
like
course.
It's very
I
pedestrian.
Watch shocking violence. I'm not here to watch Genocyber.
What is exciting about this movie to you?
What is exciting
yeah, what,
about
what got you excited? Tell
things,
me an exciting thing that happened in this movie.
Things happen. And it just
keeps.
Give me a thing.
No.
Tell me a thing.
Things happen when I go to work every fucking day. But I have my headphones in and I'm not paying attention.
But you're
attention
not watching beheadings.
I'm watching people smoking fentanyl on a fucking light rail. Like,
okay, so is that your thing, Bridget? Like, the beheading, was that exciting?
Well, that was, yes.
Where like the guy's head
That's
comes
the...
off with the
yeah, with
the
sound the effect. Fucking sock.
The
sock sound effect. Like, as I said, this is a very low 3-star, but...
You're not answering the question. What is exciting about this movie to you?
I find it exciting and enjoyable to look on... Not only animation, but just, like, as an aesthetic piece, there are... As we've all talked about, there are tons of shots where you can just easily see, oh, this is somebody's wallpaper.
I did not talk about that.
Okay, well.
I brought that part. That
yeah,
part.
Jay brought that up. I think this movie looks boring. This is median anime.
Like,
median.
Here's the thing. Evie? I agree with both you and Bridget. I think that this movie is very, very, very well animated. But Evie, I do agree that at an actual, like, aesthetic level, the things that it is animating aren't very exciting, like, visually. Like, even that shot, like, I would say it's probably the most iconic shot from the movie. during that dream sequence that Kamui has where he's like running through the sea of blood towards Kotori, like on that giant cross with the barbed wire and everything. That looks good. That looks really good. But aesthetically, it's like every like goth anime wallpaper you've ever seen in your life.
But I was about to say, this is the original wallpaper of like the most like
before DNA
irritating kid in your class. Like the guy like you do not want to talk to the guy.
I don't think it was a guy who was
who had like the barbed wire crucifix.
Well,
desktop wallpaper.
It's a little bit of a like give and get. Like it, you have, you know, the barbed wire like bloody crucifix, which is definitely more mask coded, but also you have a pretty anime boy holding a sword with like angel wings, which is more like femme anime fan coded, I would argue.
Yeah,
that's like, true. But I think you wouldn't, but you would pick a different shot of him with the wings though, right?
Probably.
Yeah.
I would say the better shot of that specific design of Kamui is the one that the Vision Kotori has like right in the very beginning, where it's like two of him and they're holding like the glass sphere that's actually the Earth that shatters into the logo for the movie.
Shatters
when they drop
into
it.
The logo X.
Sick 3D X.
Whoa.
But yeah, like, this is a movie where like psychic battles are happening. Like, it should look dope as fuck, but it's just like
there's
it,
no
it,
way
it all looks
to
very
it.
Boring.
It looks yeah. It looks good to me. The problem is those psychic fights are like 2 seconds long.
The one that I liked, like, well, there's two. There's one, the water guy, when he does like the thing where he encases himself in like the spinning top of water. That looks kind of cool. The other thing is like the hacker girl, like her whole deal looks neat, but in a way where it's like, this is like, obviously this came before Lane, but like, this is like, it kind of like suggests where like Lane kind of comes from later. Like,
sure. Like, I think the easier connection is like Masamune Shiro, like,
oh,
Ghost
yeah.
in the Shell,
yeah.
that aesthetic visually for that. But like, no, yeah, I agree. Like, from a pure animation perspective, like, Bridget, at the end of the day, I can understand why you find the animation in it exciting, but the actual core visuals of what that animation is like animating itself, that those parts aren't exciting. The psychic battles are really boring and flat. Like, the visuals themselves are very like Evie is describing, like median anime, median 90s anime. Like, there's not anything that actually makes you want to get pulled in and examine the nuances of the animation. Like, every single time you see those like psychic dragons like spawn from the earth and start like fighting each other, like, you could tell that they put in the work to make that look really like ethereal and like kinetic. But because there's no real weight behind it, the brain is just already turned off and disengaged from what you are seeing in front of you.
Oh, so, man. Yeah. 1996 for anime films was dire. We got Tenchi the movie, Tenchi Muyo in Love.
Okay.
Slayer's Return, which is... that's an okay Slayers movie. How would you compare this to MD Geist?
Was that 96?
Yes.
That strikes me as like a late 80s, early 90s. No, not
that's
96.
That's favorite sand blood.
That's wild. Before we continue this, I feel like we don't have much more to say about the movie. So, Brie, I think you're safe to start coming back in if you wanna.
Yeah.
Continue listing off 96 anime movies.
Dragon Ball: The Path of Power, which is a Dragon Ball movie, not a Dragon Ball Z movie, but a dragon.
Oh, okay.
Lupin the Third: Dead or Alive, which, it's not.
Bad year, more or less. Okay. Final thoughts on X-1999. Bridget, let's start with you for the positives. Do you have any final thoughts that you want to convey about this movie?
Yeah, if you're curious about what people were hot about at a certain time period, there's this movie. Otherwise, I can't really recommend this movie to any normal person. And in fact, you're probably better off watching the TV show directed by Yoshiaki Kawajiri. One thing I will say is, sadly, this film, like a lot of Rintaro films, is not on Blu-ray, so you will have to find it through other means. Not even in Japan.
Brie, final thoughts?
I've said everything I have to say about this. Basically just what I said. These are all fascinating concept shots for a movie that was never made. My brain is rotting continuing to talk about this. In fact, all of our very genuine arguments being shouted at the same time led to me having to, as you, the listeners, know, leave the conversation because I was not only overwhelmed by all of the shouting and my various mental illnesses, but at the same time had to relive how frustrating this fucking film was. I am so ready to be done with this film forever.
Well, I got.
I give it a half star for animation, I guess.
I got good news for you, Brie. We're almost done.
With the movie.
All right. My final thoughts, since Evie is.
Oh shit! Armitage the Third, Polymatrix was also this year.
I'll let Evie have the last final thought, since you're gonna be the next pick for a movie.
Oh yeah.
For me, my final thought on this movie is somehow this movie was worse than I remembered it being when we wrapped up the podcast last week. Like, as might have been noted, I had a very exacerbated reaction. It was worse. It was worse than I remembered the film being. Yes, Bridget?
One thing I haven't stated is I had never seen this film.
Wild.
So this is what I get for picking a film.
I had seen an anime movie you hadn't, which was the most surprising part.
This is what I get for picking a film I've never seen before, I guess.
That's fine. It's okay for us to have shorter episodes.
I had never seen Babe, and that was a real fun ride.
I like how you're like shorter episodes, and this is like almost an hour 40, which is the length of the movie itself.
It's still shorter than, like, our last episode, I'm pretty sure.
Yes, yeah. It is. Evie?
No picks in this one.
You stepped on my joke.
Did she really take the joke that you were going to say?
No.
Okay.
I was going to say, the space intentionally left blank. So for my pick,
plus two,
I thought about I first thought about spending my wild card to subject us all to the film version of the FMV game Fox Hunt.
Oh, that would have been so good.
it would have been terrible. I'm glad I didn't do that.
Would you like to explain for the people that didn't watch the stream why you were going to do that?
Yeah, so I was going to do that because Bridget, my dearest of all my friends, she had me on while she played the game Fox Hunt. And it was that game is dog shit. Like, no doubt the movie would have been dog shit, but 20 minutes from the end of that fucking video game, she just up and quit. I haven't seen the end of Fox Hunt. That, like, I'm getting no closure. That book will never be, like, it will never be shot.
Not only did she not finish it, you literally gave her a YouTube link of the, like, cutscenes to be like, yes, here, let's just at least watch the ending of this movie. That's what we're doing anyway, since it's an FMV video game.
Right. But nope.
And she's left. She's left. Bridget, yeah, where'd you go?
She just scooted off of the side. Like, she's she's making funny hand puppets.
out of embarrassment. Get back on camera.
It's very cute. Bridget, get back here. Okay. So, as far as an actual, like, what my actual pick would be, I resolved to not pick an animated movie just because I wanted to be challenged. And there were a couple of different, like, paths to find something to watch. The one I didn't go with, there's the script of the original movie was adapted to English by a man named George Rubicek, who before he adapted scripts, he was an actor, and he had an uncredited appearance in one of the Star Wars films. He was the first one, Star Wars: A New Hope. So that lets y'all know how nice I'm being by not picking that. And then he was also in Her Majesty's Secret Service. And after that, he kind of just, like, adapted anime films for several decades afterwards. Seems like he had a very nice and long career. But the path to my actual pick is the dub voice actor for Yuto, the guy with the bladed spear, like the spear knives, who got stabbed next to the chair. He has, like, three lines, and he's played by a man named Nigel Whitmey, who seems to be a fairly prolific voice actor, and has a number of, like, British TV appearances.
Okay.
His theatrical roles are pretty limited. The second choice for him would have been London Has Fallen, the sequel to Olympus Has Fallen. But before that, and just after his role in X, he was in a little movie, and I should say, Jay, this is a gift to you. You can go wherever you want after this. Like, the world is your oyster. Because Nigel was in a little movie called Saving Private Ryan.
Oh, God. Oh, God. Okay.
And so that will be our next film.
Interesting.
Oh, man. Let me type that down. Saving Private Ryan. Oh, man. There's a lot of people in that movie, too. Ooh. I've never seen that. That'll be my first time watching
this. I haven't watched it either,
actually. Yeah.
Interesting. Okay.
What about the porn title "Saving Ryan's Privates"?
I'm not sure if Ryan, if Nigel was in that one. Maybe he was.
What was the threat that was happening to Ryan's privates? If you happen to know.
CBT.
No idea.
Oh, there's. Oh, I could see it in my mind's eye. There's like a German dominatrix lady who's gonna like sexily torture him while
there's a
porn
of...
Tom Hanks makes his way to rescue.
I actually rewatched this. I want to say last year. So.
Oh really? Oh, so right. This one won't be a first time for you.
No.
How about you, Evie?
I haven't seen it other than, like, you know, a clip here or there.
Okay. What were you... I think I cut you off. Sorry, Bridget. What were you going to say?
Oh, I was just going to say, you know, it's been a year, so I'm not going to be, like, pitch perfect on...
Okay. But, yeah, I'm excited. No, yeah, I got a lot to choose from if you're throwing me that. Thank you, Evie. I genuinely appreciate that.
No problem, because I don't know. I have a feeling that next time I'll be picking some kind of anime movie, so yeah. You're gonna have no way out there.
We gotta break out of anime hell for now.
We at least broke out of anime hell. That's the important thing that happened. We went from median anime to critically acclaimed Steven Spielberg movie. So we're definitely eating better tonight, ladies. We're gonna be okay at the end of the day.
All right.
I told you, I'm perfectly fine.
So, I guess that is the end of today's episode. Social media plugs, you can find us on cohost.org, at our put it on the list. What is the proper, like, RSS thing? So, we are at, shit, if I could log into here, that would be perfect. Public website. We are at rss.com/podcast/wifecity. Subscribe to us there, at the very least, until I finally bite the bullet and put us onto Spotify or Apple Music or whatever to be on wider platforms.
The RSS feed will assure that the RSS doesn't go hungry.
Exactly.
So,
speaking of going hungry, I'm very hungry.
I am too. Let's go for
sushi after this.
Yeah.
Everyone, I'm Jay.
I'm Bree.
I'm Evie.
I'm Bridget. And I'm here to say, X give it to, gonna give it to you.
Good night, everyone. Do you want to do another take of that one more time? Try it again.
X gonna give it to you?
There you go. Okay.
No need for you to get it on your own. X is a shit movie. All right. Good night, everybody.
What?
What? All right, I'm stopping the recording now.